We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter. This is the Name More NBA podcast brought to you by the Genesis Company. Coming at you Tuesday morning, it's May 16th. Joined by Wolves beat writer Chris Hine from the Star Tribune to discuss his profile of Anthony Edwards that published over the weekend. It was titled, "What Does Anthony Edwards Want from Basketball?" It's about winning and chasing the GOAT. Chris, you and Ant, amongst other things, like the GOAT, discussed a bunch of different things for the article in what was Ant's first time speaking to the media since the Wolves got eliminated from the playoffs. It seemed to me from the quotes in the story that he's kind of had some time to reflect on what was, of course, a kind of bizarre season with an abrupt end. And then you kind of he disappears off into the whatever the players do in the offseason. We haven't heard from him, but it seemed like he had some time to reflect, and he had the quote to you just kind of that stood out to me reflecting on the season, where he said, "I left a lot out there. I know what I need to work on. I know what I need to get better at, and I just want to be in the best shape. My season was okay. It could have been a lot better." And I think that's a good place to start talking about this, and that it reflects on the season and looks forward into what the summer will be for him. So talking to him for that interview, what do you think were the main things behind why he felt his season was okay? And then how do those kind of shape what this summer is going to look like for him?
I think it's as simple as they just didn't win enough for him. And I think that's why, in part, he feels like his season was just okay.
Okay.
That was kind of what he said in kind of the follow-up discussion about that quote. They just didn't win enough. And we heard him in the Denver series say, "I can't be considered a young star in the league until I've at least made it out of the first round of the playoffs." So it all kind of goes hand in hand with just not winning enough to satisfy him. I think he took it a little bit on himself, the fact that they weren't as successful as they were, the fact that they, you know, maybe lost some of these games they should have won. And I think he has done a little bit of thinking about, like, okay, so what needs to change in those moments, in these games, in a playoff game late, or in a just a game in on a Thursday night in January? What needs to change for us to win some of these games? And one of the answers he came up with is he needs to be shooting the ball at the end of games. And that is the right play for him at the end of games. I don't get the sense he's going to want to defer too much. And so that'll be an interesting dynamic to see, like, how that plays out between, like, him and Carl, you know, at the end of games, and who wants the ball and who's going to get the ball and what that's all going to look like next year. And, you know, they have an off season and a training camp to try and iron these things out, presumably, as long as everybody's healthy and back over the off season and in training camp. We, you know, as we learned last year, we can't always take that for granted. So, you know, we'll see. But that stuck out to me, is that I think he's done a lot of thinking about these end of game situations and what he needs to do to get better. And it ties into one of his ultimate goals of the summer, which we'll get to, which is to improve contested shot making.
Mm-hmm. See, when I read that line about, or the kind of the whole segment of the article on late game offense, like, I guess the way I think about it in late game offense is that it already has been going through Ant. And, you know, part of that, obviously, was Carl not being there for 52 games. But, man, I even think back to, like, his first year, like, when Ryan was the coach. And I remember Ant taking as many, at least in my head, as many late game shots, you know, as Carl did. And, you know, Carl comes back this year, and in those first two games, he gets that shot, or he gets to the free throw line, hits the free throws to win the game. I think that was against Atlanta. And then the next game, he hits that three, like in transition against Golden State. And so, like, yes, were those like the last points of the game? Sure. But it didn't really like signal to me at the time, particularly the three against Golden State, that it was like some sort of recalibration of the offense that was like, okay, late game, we're going to Carl, and now Ant is co-pilot. Like, I kind of feel like Ant is the pilot of those times. That's his skill set. It's his position. Carl's position's harder to do that. It didn't stick out to me that he was like, I want those shots late, because I was kind of like, you already get those. What I'm thinking about overall is, how do you make late game offense better? How does Ant make his late game offense more efficient? What are his decision making there? Where are the times when he does see a double and then he goes to somebody else in those, you know, whether that's the one time he kicked to Jaden in the corner and Jaden missed the shot against you, like those sort of things. It's an overall, like, how do the Wolves get better in late game offense? I don't think it's necessarily about the pecking order, because to me, I don't know, correct me if you disagree with this, but like, I feel like Ant is pretty clearly at the top of the pecking order in terms of late game offense, or he just takes it. Like, I just feel like Ant has been the guy there for a while now.
Yeah, I agree with you in part because Carl just wasn't there for most of the season. So that's just kind of what this team developed. But we saw how clunky it was at times just for them trying to figure things out in late game offense. It was clearly not one of the strong suits of this team last season. But I wonder, with Carl coming back, does Carl try to say, hey, we shouldn't be playing through Ant in these moments, we should be trying to play through me a little bit more? Like,
how about this wild idea? How about both? How about an action with both of them?
How about you both play off of each other?
Yeah, something like that.
Like, exactly. So, like I said, there's a whole offseason, there's a whole training camp for them to figure this out, how this is going to work, what it's going to look like. So, and we know that Ant and Cat like each other, they get along just fine. You know, it's not, I don't sense it's going to be any sort of problem. They just have to get together and kind of just figure out what's going to maximize everybody in the last 3-4 minutes of a game.
We overrate who gets the last shot. And I remember, and Carl was asked about
I'm
that
with you there.
You know, at his exit interview, and Ant didn't have an exit interview, but it's like, I don't know. It's an overly simplified line of questioning, or like way to think about it. The way that it was, I thought, presented to Carl, like, what's Carl supposed to say? Like, no, I don't want the ball late in games. I only want Ant to do it. Like,
everybody wants the ball late in games.
Sure. And so it's like, it's about finding, I think for the Wolves, it's about finding like a late game ecosystem that works, that not only taps into Ant or Carl, but everyone. I mean, we can picture it, like what it's going to look like if in game one of next season, there's like they're down by one and there's 12 seconds left. Like, they're going to put two on the ball on Ant, probably, right? Or they're going to try and take away, you know, Carl on the pop or whatever it's going to be. It's, I don't know. I just think late game offense, particularly in the league today, if it's not just one of those situations where like Jason Tatum or Jimmy Butler are just standing there, like dribbling. Okay, 8 seconds, somebody come set me a screen. Like, we think about that as being the last shot of the game, but there's so many other shots that happen in late game offense. And those two should feed off of each other in an awesome way.
And that's always been one of the things I've just in watching the NBA that just drives me up a wall sometimes is when teams just go dribble, dribble, dribble. Okay, 8 seconds. Let's do something now.
Right.
And the Wolves certainly have fallen victim to that a lot last season. It's like, why do you stop running your stuff?
Right.
Just because it's late game offense. Why? I mean, I get people get tired. Fatigue plays a factor, this and that. But I think they have to find a way to run stuff, or whether it's a play call, whether it's a just running your offense in a late game situation. Just get moving.
Mm-hmm.
Above all, really, get the offense moving, because movement is going to help teams from, if they double ant, movement is going to help maybe get the ball back to him.
Yeah.
If the ball swings around with Carl. Carl is pretty good on the move. Like, yeah. Get him moving, get him going off the dribble potentially. So I think that's one of the biggest things that the coaching staff has to figure out is what does our late game offense really look like, and really drill down into how best to maximize Ant and Carl playing together in those moments.
And it comes down to, as a whole, but as to focus on the article, it's like the idea of, as you put it in there, digesting the defense, right? And that it comes from like an Ant perspective, right? And reading the coverage. But overall, you know, the team needs to read, whether it's late game or the second quarter, like, how are they guarding us and how do we adjust accordingly? And I think, to Ant's credit, this season, he got a lot better with that. And you talked to one of his player development coaches, Chris Hines, which is very confusing, I'm sure,
to
readers that Chris Hines wrote it. Chris Hines, C. Hines, as we call him, just kind of talked about how Ant has seen every defense now at this point. I think that really kicked in this year when Carl was out and teams were like, all right, like fourth quarter, second quarter, first quarter, whatever, like, this is, if we could turn the water off here with Ant, then we'll live, with elsewhere. What stood out to you about not only what kind of C. Hines told you about in Ant's growth of digesting defenses, but what Ant said to you there as well about how he's kind of learned that element of the game, that it's not, once you're at his level, you're not going to just see one defense. You're not just going to see one defender. It's going to be a diversity of coverages.
The big thing in that section, and I think that C. Hines talked about, was the term accepting the defense. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, it's digesting what teams are going to do, and you have to accept that and adjust accordingly. And accepting that means, if the best play for you is to give up the ball because they're double teaming you, beyond the 3-point line, then you need to give up the ball and accept that. You can't try to dribble around it, mm-hmm. or make things happen. Just get off the ball and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And then make them pay for that for a couple minutes, and then maybe they get out of it, and then you can get back into, what you maybe do best and skill, and you're back more involved in the game. It's accepting the defense. It's staying engaged in moments like that when they're trying to take you out of the game or trying to disengage you from the game. And I think that's been a growth process for him that necessarily wasn't there in, let's say, year two. Mm-hmm. And I just think with Ant overall, I think everything has been a very gradual process with him through three seasons. I think we've seen him, the growth is, they talk a lot about his growth, and it doesn't always happen right away when it comes to breaking down defensive coverages or reading defense or making the right play, things like that. But I do feel like it happens eventually.
Yeah.
Like it they get to that point eventually with him. And I think that's an encouraging thing for him moving forward, is that it doesn't always happen overnight. He has to see it a lot in games to finally adjust to something, as opposed to seeing it on film, mm-hmm. or being told something on film. But if he sees it enough, he's going to adjust to it eventually and make the right plays or do the right things. So I think that's one of the encouraging things over his three seasons, is it doesn't always click in right away what he needs to do or how he kind of absorbs this information, but he does absorb it and he does adjust, And I think we've seen that over 3 years in his growth.
Yeah, I think initially he came into the league as like a hands-on learner. Like, mm-hmm. I need to, whether it's coverages or honestly, like, I kind of see it on the defensive side with him more of like learning what it feels like to get picked or navigating a screen, or on the offensive side, you know, navigating coverages in that sort of way. I think where I saw him grow or heard he grew this year was like kind of coupling that together with film. Like, maybe they showed him the film and then he goes, okay, I felt it hands-on on the floor and I adjusted to it. Early on in his career, it seemed like it was all just whatever happened on the floor. And once your like star elevates in the league, you do see so many more of these coverages. You see so many more of these things that you have to learn how to navigate different coverages of the way that you're being guarded. And I think Ant has grown with that, with his development staff and individually. And I think now he's the next part to navigate is like aggressiveness through coverages. Like, what are the times when I can be super aggressive? Like, and that's why I like that nobody in the article said, I'm going to take what the defense gives me, because I feel like that is the most messed up, like, mentality to go into any sort of coverage, because what they are giving you is what they want you to do. And I really liked C. Hines' line, which was like, his growth is to accept the defense more, like you said. Okay, this is how they're playing me. If you play a drop coverage, I have to get downhill. He's starting to read that. And yeah. Like, what is a drop coverage, right? They are giving you the mid-range. So what C. Hines is saying is, actually don't
settle for that.
Don't take what the defense is giving you. Go and get what they're trying to take away, which is like a distinction to be made at different coverages, right? That's a pick and roll coverage. Whereas when they are just bringing that double up, like on him 30 feet from the basket, well, you can't, that's different. You have to give it up in that situation. There isn't something to be taken there, unless you can, you know, kind of maybe split it if they're weak with their coverage. But if they're executing it like effectively, it's that distinction between like what they're giving you and what they're taking away. Those are different sort of things. And I think Ant is growing in that, and ultimately will be kind of, we will elevate his ceiling as he better understands that as he becomes 22, 23, 24 years old in the league. And yeah, I take from this year that he has grown in that after, you know, honestly, kind of having come into the league, not really having had a lot of skills in discernment of what that is. But I've heard Ant say too many times early in his career, I'm going to take what the defense gives me. And that isn't going to be the best thing. And I think he has the right people in his ears to, you know, to kind of push forth the idea of, all right, there's some nuance here, right? It depends where you're seeing the coverage in that sort of way. So I just think there's so much ceiling for Ant to be able to tap specifically in this, in the way that he's being guarded.
It's a good point about the drop coverage, where it's like, listen, they're in a drop coverage in part because they don't want you to get to the rim.
Yes.
Like, they're afraid of you getting to the rim. Mm-hmm. This is why they're playing this kind of coverage.
Yes.
So, but you're good enough that you could still get there and mm-hmm. still beat it.
Yes.
You know, and if you do get there, it's going to open other things up in the offense. And if you just settle for mid-range after mid-range jumper, you can hit a few of them, but you're not good enough at the mid-range consistently enough to make that a valuable mm-hmm. possession. But you are great going to the rim and generating things off of that. So I think it's also kind of making him understand that. We know Ant would, you know, earlier versions of Ant would just take that mid-range jumper all day.
And give it
like, this is a good shot.
Yeah.
15 feet, I'm open.
Right.
Like, I'm going to take that shot, right?
But the reality of this situation is he took 449 shots from mid-range this season and made 37% of them. And he took 569 shots from three-point range and made
37% of them, right.
You know, and about the same amount at the rim.
Somebody needs to put that on a whiteboard for him and just do the math. Like, yeah. Look, at 37%, equals this many points. 37 right. from 3-point range equals this many points. Like, yeah.
And it's not an intuitive thing, because if you weren't playing basketball with thinking about it that way coming up, as I don't think any of us were when we were 15, 16 years old, right? You're like, I'm just trying to get buckets. That right. is the nuance. That is part of the nuance of growing an NBA defense. Chris, let's grab our first break here. Come back. I want to talk some more about the getting to the rim part and how C. Hines called that Ant's superpower. So we'll be back with Chris here in a minute. Today's show is brought to you by Land and Lore. And did you know that research shows looking tired negatively affects your ability to be successful? As if life wasn't hard enough, right? But a study in the Sleep Journal found that individuals who were perceived as tired were less approachable than others. So good luck getting that raise, that girl or guy or that prospect you're trying to land if people don't want to be around you. But don't worry, Land and Lore has you covered. At Land and Lore, they created products designed to wake your face up. So if you spent all night watching reruns of Ant putting it on Gabe Vincent or Pat Bev dancing on the scorer's table, they got you covered. And as fans of the Timberwolves, they know life isn't full of highlights, so they have one for you. Use promo code 20caveman at checkout on amazon.com to get 20% off their two best items, the face cleanser and moisturizer. That's 20caveman for 20% off Land and Lore face cleanser and moisturizer when you purchase on Amazon. Today's show is brought to you by Falling Knife Brewing Company, and I wanted to let you know that Britt Robson and I will be doing a live show at Falling Knife on June 1st for Game 1 of the NBA Finals. We're going to do a little live show Q&A sort of thing. Can answer Wolves questions, finals questions, whatever. We'll do that at 6:30. Then the game starts at 7:30 p.m. We'll hang out there. You can watch the game in the tap room on the TVs inside. They'll also have their TV truck outside, so you can watch out on the patio if you want to bring a chair in the parking lot. Set yourself up there with Falling Knife's beer. So put that on your calendar. June 1st, live show, Britt and I, 6:30 p.m. Game 1 of the finals then starts at 7:30 p.m. We'll watch that all together. I'll keep reminding you about this in the coming weeks, but that is coming up on June 1st again, 6:30 p.m. Live show, 7:30 p.m. is when the game will tip off. And then also, quickly, May 19th, the Link season opener will also be showing at Falling Knife Brewing Company. So if you're looking for a place to go check that out, put that on your calendar as well. That's Falling Knife Brewing Company, Northeast Minneapolis. All right, we're back with Chris Hine from the Star Tribune. We're talking about his feature story he wrote on Anthony Edwards over the weekend at the Star Tribune. I mean, it's a long article, a ton of different quotes. We're hitting on a few of them here.
Even much longer than I told my editors it was going to come in, which is a habit for me. I always say, hey, everybody, it's going to come in at like, I think I told them like 40 column inches, which is like 1,200 words in newspaper.
Yeah, this one parlance. Was a fatty.
This one was about 2,000 words. This was athletic length actually, it's a light athletic piece, I should say. 2,000 words, some athletic pieces, they're just getting warmed up.
John's just clearing his throat after 2,000.
That's correct. Britt, 2,000 is barely an introduction sometimes for Britt. So,
it was good. And it tied together a whole bunch of different things with the offseason. Is obviously the offseason's loaded for Ant in a ton of different ways, which we'll get to here. But I want to keep talking about as we're talking about digesting the defense and the necessity to get to the rim, even if that's what the defense is trying to take away. I thought it was interesting, and obviously you did this intentionally in your article where C. Hines was like, Ant's superpower is getting to the rim. And then Ant goes, I don't think my superpower is getting to the rim. He's like, I'm a scorer. I don't pride my game on just getting to the rim. I hate when people say that I work too hard to be somebody who finishes at the rim. I can score the ball with the best of them, which obviously, you know, C. Hines feels as well. But it's, again, it's as we were talking about with those numbers. It's like, what's the balance? And you or I, even though we're kind of joking about some of those mid-range numbers, like that is, we know that that's a necessary part of the game. It's only 24 seconds on the shot clock. There's broken plays. Ant has the ability, you know, to get a clean mid-range look on his own whenever he wants, which a lot of people don't, you know, that might just stall out and be a 24-second call, right? Like, there is value in Ant being a scorer on all three levels. He is already that and will become better at those sort of things. It's just about finding, right, the the balance of your shot distribution. And that's been, I mean, I just know from us asking Finch about that over the course of time. And Merrill Finch was like, yeah, like NBA players today, it's like a point of pride to be able to like isolate and score in the mid-range, kind of like the Kobe, whatever, the Kobe style of offense, which is fun. And there's a time and a place for that. But I think what C. Hines is ultimately talking about, or what Finch has alluded to in the past, is like, let's remember what the best things are. When all three options of rim, mid-range, and the three-point shot are there, let's focus on the ones that derive the most points for them. And so I think Ant gets that. He also just doesn't want, I mean, is that how you took it, of him just saying like, I don't want to limit myself to being one thing, or I don't want to be viewed as Giannis.
I didn't get this in the piece. I had to leave some things on the cutting room floor. I couldn't include every quote that I got from Ant. But one of the things
that's why you come on this podcast.
That's right.
All right, here we go. Let's
correct.
Scoop it up.
So one of the things that he takes pride in is he takes pride in being a good shooter.
Yeah.
And I, at one point in the interview, I'm trying to find it here. I was talking to him just about like his shooting, and it was kind of right around the time he said that quote. It's hard to I asked him like, is it hard to constantly go to the rim as much as you do this and things like that? We got to just his mid-range shooting, his three-point shooting. You know, he's like, I was like 37% from three-point range. He's like, I don't think that's too bad, especially for somebody that they said couldn't shoot coming into the draft. That was basically the quote.
Right.
So he is determined,
right,
I think, to be known as a good shooter in this league.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that drives him and has driven him from the time he came into the NBA.
Right.
Like now I'm going to prove you guys wrong. You don't think I can shoot? I can shoot.
And I think he has, Chris. I mean, at least from three-point range. Like, he's 569 threes, 37%. That's great.
That's not bad at all. Absolutely. Yeah. He's done a really good job of becoming a good three-point shooter in three seasons. It's all credit to him and the work that he's been putting in with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big part of his identity. I think it is. He recognizes that his superpower is getting to the rim,
mm-hmm,
but don't sleep on the fact that he wants to be known as a really good, dangerous shooter.
Which is, I think, his way of like also wanting to be viewed as the Kevin Durant, the mid-range shooter, the Kawhi, right? Like, wait, I can actually be elite here as well. And I'm just like, pulling up, like, this is crazy. Like, just looking at Kevin Durant.
Yeah, those guys' mid-range percentages are a lot different than his.
I'm just looking at it. KD's long mid-range, which is, what is that, like the 14-plus feet. The last 5 years, 54%, 52%, 56%, 57%, 58%. I mean, Ant is in the low 30s there, which doesn't mean he can't get there. But I think, to your point, that's what he aspires to be, right, is not only elite at the rim, not only a high-level three-point shooter that can create from himself, but also someone who can create from that long mid-range area when necessary. Yeah, here it is with him. Ant, 25% from long range, long mid-range, his rookie year, 35, 35, the next 2 years. There's a gap there, and I think, honestly, whether the coaches want it or not, he is going to try and bake that into who he is, because to his credit, he wants to be elite at everything. And, you know, at 21 years old, given how much he's shown already, we can't really rule that out, right? We can't say he's not going to be able to do that. We're always going to say the better shots for him, as we would say for KD, are going to be threes and at the rim. But it's when you have a usage as high as these guys do, to have that usage be that high, it's not going to just be threes and at the rim. Yeah. And I think Ant knows that, right? He knows to be the 30-point scorer that he wants to be, he's going to also need to be, he's going to need to create at all three levels.
Correct. And I think that's the key thing, is he's going to have to take, for somebody who has the ball in his hands as much as he does, for somebody who takes as many shots as he does, he's going to have to take some mid-range shots. It's just, like you said, it's just going to happen in the course of a game,
mm-hmm,
where it may not always be the intent of a possession, but it's just going to come about when somebody has the ball at as high a usage rate as he does on a night in, night out basis. So there's no sense in just shooing it or saying, don't work on your mid-range game because you shouldn't be taking those shots anyway. No, like, he's going to be taking those shots. He's got to work on it. And that's another focal point of his summer, with the contested shot making, because that comes from the mid-range. It comes from three-point range. It's all over the court. It's a kind of have to live with it. Hope he gets better. Hope he can approach 50% from the mid-range to make it at least worth the while.
Right.
If he's going to take a high volume or higher volume of it. So it'll be fascinating to see kind of next season what that shot mix looks like for him.
Right. Particularly with Carl back in the mix. Right.
Particularly with Carl. Yep.
Like Ant, I was looking this up amongst wings. As Cleaning the Glass does it, only three players had a higher usage rate than Ant did this season: Devin Booker, Cade Cunningham, and Paul George. You wouldn't want to say that a player's usage is going to go down from age 21 to 22, but given the circumstances of not having Carl for 52 games this year, not really having a chemistry with Rudy over the course of the year, like, you would think other buckets of the Wolves are going to be filled up, or there's going to be the demand to fill them up from the coach or from those other players. And that part, that's like the adjacent part to this wanting to expand his game and be more and more, is like, all right, but what is the rate at which, the frequency with which you do your thing versus you involving other players? And that's going to be the tricky balance, right? And like you said, with the training camp and, knock on wood, having everybody around, I think you can kind of hammer out some of those sort of things, even this summer, right? I mean, you got some good anecdotes from him about who he's going to be working out with this summer, what his plans are there. I mean, I think that stuff's critical in terms of, particularly given it was his first year with Rudy or didn't get to play with Cap much this year. Honestly, figuring that stuff in July, August, before you get to training camp in September, is going to be really valuable. So what did he say in terms of what his plans are for working out the summer specifically and who he's wanting to work out with?
Yeah, most of the summer he's going to spend in Minnesota, which I think is a little bit of a change from last summer, which I think was spent a lot in Atlanta, or at least some of it in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Atlanta and LA, I think, is where he was.
Yeah. So, no, he said a lot of it's going to be here. Mm-hmm. And that's in part because he wants to work out with some of the younger guys on the team. He wants to work out with Jaden, and have Jaden, guard him in workouts, and which can, I think, benefit both of them if that's going to be a battle throughout the summer, the two of them going.
I mean,
at it.
who better to practice against if you're either of them? I mean, I know that's what you're kind of saying.
That's exactly,
like,
it. It's like, if Jaden's going to become the best defender in the league, who better for him to go against than Anthony Edwards? And if Ant's going to become the offensive player he wants to be, who better for him to go against than Jaden McDaniels over
no-brainer.
The summer?
Yeah.
Like, it makes a lot of sense. He wants to go to France, or he's planning on going to France with Rudy. They've talked about it. Mm-hmm. Rudy's going to pay for everything, allegedly. that was one of the quotes in the article. Rudy got all the money, his aunt says. So all expenses paid trip to France coming up for Ant, which is very exciting for him.
We'll see how cheapskate that is based on when he signs his extension, because Ant's going to be up in the, I guess it won't start next year, but Ant's
kind of what I reminded him of. I'm like, hey, you're going to be far behind there, buddy.
Right. Yeah, well, I think...
And possibility, I didn't talk to Ant about this, but possibility he'll be playing for the USA in the FIBA World Cup this year as well.
Which, that was
we'll
a...
See, we'll see if that comes to fruition.
Very interesting anecdote in there. I mean, I've just kind of thought, I've talked about this, of like, just the Olympics are in France next summer, and, we're wanting to go there to cover that. And, because it's Rudy and... I don't know, probably be playing with like Wemby and all that, but it'd be really cool if Ant is on the USA team for the Olympics in 2024 and kind of the first step in that process would be playing, you know, this year with the team, which he did. Was that,
he was last on the select, summer? He was on the, what, select. The select team 2 summers ago.
Is that what
before,
it was?
Before they went to Tokyo.
He that rolled his ankle.
That was in 2021. Yeah, yeah. Yep. 2021, because the Olympics were delayed a year because of the pandemic.
That's what it was.
So in the summer of 2021, he was on the select team, but like rolled his ankle the first day or something like that, if I remember.
Wasn't Nas there too with the select team?
Just I think Nas was there too. Yeah, I think Nas was there.
This is really good reporting by us here.
Yeah, yeah, really good research. Yeah, I think they were both there.
Yeah,
if I recall correctly, now you're bringing up memories.
Yeah, well, I didn't even know what year it was, but anyway, I think like, I mean, in all seriousness, in Ant's like overall sort of growth into being this star, we have enough anecdotes over the course of time of the value of that, right? And the value of being around other star players and the whole like iron sharpens iron, however that goes, saying. I mean, I think Ant really can and will benefit from that, being on the Olympic team and being around people like that. And I mean, the quote from your article that really like got all the pub, and I think is you know, somewhat related to this Olympics idea, is his pursuit of MJ. And I think like that's a lot of where MJ in his career, as I remember it, kind of made that turn into being like the dude in the league, right? Was Magic and Bird later in their careers, and that was kind of like the competition. I would just love to see Ant in that environment, and to the extent that I know Ant, really, I think he would thrive in high level competition like that, playing against the best of the best players on his own team in practice. And that is probably a step in the process of his extremely lofty goal of wanting to be the best shooting guard of all time, which really means the best player of all time. But I'll just ask you about that MJ quote he gave you. What was that like?
Yeah, that was an anecdote that C. Hines shared with me first, stemming from when they first started working together. I think it was kind of like after his first season or like late that season, whatever it was. And C. Hines just wanted to have a conversation with him. And, you know, he wanted to say, what's your goal here? What's your goal for your career? You know, and like, be honest. Right. Like, do you just want to make a lot of money? Do you want to be like a good player? You know, how hard do you really want to work? And Ant said, I want to be the best shooting guard ever. And C. Hines is like, well, you know, Michael Jordan played shooting guard, right? And so like, that's basically the tone of the conversation. It's like, that's who you got to get if you want to be the best shooting guard of all time, and the work and the dedication that that's going to require. So from that day, it's kind of been like, yep, that's who's at the top of the list, right? That's who I have to aspire to get to.
If there isn't a I'm chasing my boy MJ shirt on Jake's graphs in the next like month, then Jake, you're slacking.
That or Rudy got all the money or something like that.
Like, that one has like a negative connotation.
Yeah. I'm chasing my boy MJ. Yeah. And you can just kind of hear it. You can kind of picture Ant saying it or hear him saying that, like, with like kind of a smile on his face. Like that definitely came across like
when we were
chatting about that little story, for sure. And of course, yeah, that Bleacher Report and all them picked up on on that. And you wouldn't know that there was a whole 2,000 word story behind that anecdote, because they just clipped that quote and ran with it.
This is random, but you worked for the Chicago Tribune for what, 8 years?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever talked to you about this. And obviously this was after the Michael Jordan's time in Chicago. But I've found myself, I mentioned this on the pod a while ago, over All-Star break, I rewatched The Last Dance. And it was different to, you know, kind of binge watch it all rather than when we were watching it, you know, week by week during the pandemic. And And, you know, and obviously extremely lofty goal for Ant to be wanting to be MJ and all those sort of things. But I don't think it's like the most, it's not an outlandish goal, right? He has the skill set to be able to be a really special player in the league. There's no doubts about that. Players around the league have talked about this too. This isn't us just gassing him up. But my question to you is like, what sort of like cultural impact do you think Ant can have here in Minnesota, Minneapolis, in the ways that MJ did there at that time when he was, you know, granted it was years down the line. I think Jordan didn't, you know, make the playoffs or advance in the playoffs until like his mid-20s, something like that. But what parallels do you see between the two of them, not just as basketball players, but kind of as, you know, kind of beacons in the culture of where they play?
Yeah, I think some of it has to do with style of play, how exciting and entertaining it is to watch them play. I think that plays a huge factor in it.
Boom.
Because it's exciting. It was exciting in the 80s to watch, and early 90s to watch Michael Jordan do what he did before he won six titles. Like, he was just an exciting player to watch. Anthony Edwards, exciting player to watch. Galvanizes the arena, galvanizes the fan base when he's got it rolling, right? Mm-hmm. And everything that goes with it, his personality, the charisma, his smile, his energy, all of it. Like, it's kind of a similar vibe in that way to like this. He's caught on very quickly because of who he is as a person and how he plays the game. I think that's a big part of it, is you just derive joy from watching him play the game. Mm-hmm. And that's who he is, tends to be as a person off the court as well. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how this, you know, this goes from here. You know, Jordan played in Chicago, so it's one of the larger markets, obviously. So,
but the Bulls were down bad.
It doesn't matter.
They were down bad.
Listen, I don't think that matters as much as people tend to think it does. Mm-hmm. I mean, Giannis has become a huge star playing for Milwaukee. You know, so I don't think the size of the market is going to be necessarily a hindrance. Mm-hmm. But, you know, ultimately, winning is gonna determine all.
Right.
You know, you got to win. Mm-hmm. Jordan didn't really become Michael Jordan until he finally started beating the Pistons and winning titles with the Bulls.
Which, again, so, just from the documentary, like re-remembering that was so long into his career, right? Like,
right.
And we
he was how old when he won his first title? Was it 30?
Well, 30, so 29, that was, 30? That was 90, 20, it was 90, 91, right? Yeah.
91 would have been his first title. So that would have been like his seventh year in the league at
27,
that point.
28. Like, and that, and even the part, now that I have his page pulled up here, like, his first year in the league was at 21, you know, like,
yeah,
that's just the difference. And so like the, back then in the 80s, like the development of your teens and very early 20s, was developed in college, right? And that's just different today, right? Like that, it's a completely, like, guys come into the league. LeBron came in at 18, Ant came in at a young 19, and it's like I have to remind myself often how much more time Ant has before the normal line of when we really historically put expectations, like elite expectations on players, right? Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with Anthony Edwards not having got out of the first round of the playoffs by age 21.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if he agrees with that.
Right. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, first of all, for a number one pick to be in the playoffs two of three seasons, I feel like is kind of rare.
Totally.
In the NBA nowadays.
Not to mention what he's done in the playoffs individually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both of those years. I mean, as last time you were on here, you know, we were very down on this team overall the night after the the season ended after game five there. But, mm-hmm. as the players do, you know, you take a step away from it and you look back at the picture as a whole. Those are the things I'm reminding myself of even the greatest player of all time. It took him a really long time to be an all-star. He was an all-star as a rookie, but to be
a winner. That door.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. And that should require patience on all levels, the fan base, the media, and Ant himself, and understanding that this is a long climb to be what his stated goal is, to be, if not the best player, one of the best players in the league or one of the best players of all time. It was just interesting, like, rewatching that documentary after having seen Ant grow up a little. I watched it for the first time. I think that would have been his rookie year, or even before he played, right? It was during COVID.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, rewatching it, I was like, oh yeah, like, this has a different arc than maybe we all expect or put on some of these players. And at 21, for Ant to be having these goals and for them to not seem completely outlandish is really there's a lot of power in that. And I don't think that's us blowing smoke. I don't think it's Patrick Beverley when he says these things, or Paul, the players who have really heaped praise on him. I don't think it's outlandish. It's seeing a ceiling that is so high that is really untapped. Like we were talking about with the defense. I mean, there's so many small things that Ant can do that he's not doing right now. And he's already a really, really good player. I don't know. I'm encouraged by the idea that, again, from some of these quotes in your piece, that he's aspiring to that. And he seems to be taking the right steps to move in that direction. Chris, let's take another break. I want to talk more specifically about what this summer looked like. He talked about being in the best shape and some of those other things that we haven't touched on here. I think that stuff is critical. So grab another break and we'll be back with Chris to dive into the end of his piece.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, we're back with Chris Hine for a final segment here on his feature on Anthony Edwards, which it's funny how we could turn a 2,000-word article into an hour-long podcast somehow.
This is content creation at its finest here.
You hit me up after you did the interview. You're like, hey, got a feature coming out on Ant. And I'm like, perfect, let's go.
Get it on the docket.
Let's pod go. Fodder. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned before the break, the thing that stood out to me, and to be honest, that I didn't feel was super articulated by Ant of how he's going to do this, was his multiple statements to you about being in the best shape. his best shape, the best shape in the league, those sort of things. I think we see a ton, as we've been talking about, we see a ton of ceiling in Ant. I, over the 3 years I've covered him, I see one of the things that could potentially hold him back being his cardiovascular fitness, physical fitness, the shape he's in overall. He's ran into walls with that, which is somewhat to be expected of all of a sudden you're playing 82 games in a season, right. But it's not crazy to say, given the things we know, and he's publicly said that, you know, he has some dietary things he needs to work on as he gets older, and he has some physical fitness things that he has to work on. So I'm curious from your conversation with him or with C. Hines about what that part specifically looks like for his growth this summer in terms of just being in, going from being in good shape to great shape.
We didn't really delve into too many specifics about mm-hmm. that. I think because workouts just tend to change too based on what sure. you're trying to do and what you're trying to focus on that particular day as well. He did mention that he was going to be watching what he ate a little better. There was that. I tend to think sometimes maybe the, you know,
the oh yeah, like the hot Cheeto or the hot fries thing. It gets overblown.
It's like, I think it gets overblown.
But yeah. Chris, it can be both, man. Though it can be both.
Sure,
like it's overblown, and I think simultaneously, it's fair to say Ant needs to be
better. I don't think we need to, like, you know, kind of stigmatize, oh, Ant just eats terrible all
right.
the time.
Like, right.
That's not the case.
Well, it's not accurate. It isn't that he does that all the time. He doesn't have a unilaterally terrible diet. But could it be better? I think it's fair to say that it could. His diet could be better. And his physical fitness.
C. Hines did have a quote in our interview where he said, like, you know, what kind of fuel is he putting into his body? Like, is it, you know, is it premium gasoline or is it regular? Yeah. You know, he's like, I don't know. Right. You know, kind of along those lines. Right. But Ant did say that he was going to be watching his diet a little more. He started having a kind of footwork and agility coach as well this summer. And I guess maybe that's one specific that's okay. maybe a little different. One of the people that is in there, among the people that I mentioned that he's going to be working out with is a footwork and agility coach. That's a little different. It's going to be one of the workouts he does. That's a Lily Abdul Malik, hopefully I'm saying that correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed that name in there. I didn't recognize.
Agility trainer that he's been working out with. So that's a little bit new for him. And we'll see kind of what the results of that are. I think it'll be this is something that we'll open training camp with, where we can maybe ask him, like, Ant, you know, you said you wanted to be in the best shape possible. Mm-hmm. How did you go about that this summer? Mm-hmm. And what did your kind of routine look like?
And the only reason we bring it up is because, right, if the stated goal is MJ, mm-hmm. there's little room to fudge around, right? Like,
yeah,
you kind of
yes.
gotta be like 10 out of 10 in almost everything, right? Like,
exactly, yeah. The big thing with him was, you know, from year two to year three, treatment became a much bigger deal to him. Mm. So that was a big focus
like that.
Throughout the season, just the maintenance of his body, making sure he's doing the things afterwards or on off days or before, you know, just taking the time to come in and do those kind of work, mm-hmm. that kind of work and routine as well, which is something that wasn't always there early in his career. So that's a big step as well, was the maintenance of it all.
Yeah, I liked that quote from C. Hines when he said, when he first came in, he was like, let's roll the ball out and play. Second year was like, I'm not hurt, so I'm not going in. Now he's understanding maintenance. And that's kind of been his physical growth, which I think, you know, we all get, like, when you're 19, you kind of feel like you can play 82, let's just roll the ball out there and play. But then in his second year, right, that knee tendinopathy thing kind of comes mm-hmm. up and you're like, what is this? You know, and maintenance over the course of an 82 game season, when you play as many games and as many minutes as Ant does, and he's passionate about doing, clearly, maintenance along the way is critical. And I think what C. Hines is saying there is he gets that now. And that, you're like, there's all these different things that go into best shape, the fuel you're putting into your body, the work you're doing, but also the taking care of your body when you're relaxing or just getting that work done, which is just maintenance on your body. I heard plenty of anecdotes of that over the course of the season too, that Ant's taking that part a lot more seriously. And yeah, he missed some games this year, but that was a sprained ankle. It wasn't like it wasn't the gradual impact of 82 games that seemed to really put him out this season. And I think that was a product of growing in the work he's doing on the training table.
100%. And there were nights where I think back to that one Houston game, the one that they won. And I still think that I never confirmed that with him, but I still think he was not expecting to play that particular night. And I think it was after he had, like, I don't think it was after he banged his hip or whatever was ailing him at that.
Yeah, I think it was shortly after the Milwaukee hip
break. Right, it was after the Milwaukee thing where he banged his hip and, you know, he wasn't sure if he was going to play. Then he showed up at the arena late that day, mm-hmm. and I don't think he was expecting to play, and then he played.
Right.
Like, you know, that to me was kind of but it was one of the defining moments of his season. I feel like for him and just where his mindset was or where the team's mindset was sure. with him, where it's like, you got to push through it a little bit here. Mm-hmm. You know, like the Wolves, I don't think, and the culture that Chris Finch has been trying to set is one of, you can't let some soreness prevent you from playing. If you're injured and you have an injury, that's a different thing, but you got to kind of push through and be available.
Yeah.
To play, even when you're not 100% and super rested or what have you. And that's been kind of a tone I think Finch has been trying to set since the moment he got here.
For sure.
If you're a little bit, soreness is a little bit different than injury. And you got to find a way. And that's a big thing for Ant, I think. And maintenance goes along with that because, all right, you still need to be in as good of shape as you can get, as close to that 100%. Marker as you can get. This is a part of that, right. But you also still need to be available to play, and taking games off isn't necessarily going to be the way to maintain you, or you know at the load management term, you know, is...
Well, and Ant seems to be on board with that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it's harder when you are sore and you got to go through it and you got to get the work done, but Ant wants to play. I don't have any doubts about that. He's not trying to take off nights here and there. And to the Finch point and the organizational point of, like, yeah, he is set to get a $200+ million contract extension this summer. Like, that comes with some expectations too, that some expectations that have become muddied by the load management stuff. I mean, you look at the Clippers and what some of those players who are making that much money aren't doing. But I think there's kind of this battle that a lot of teams face of getting their best players to play as much as they reasonably can. And I think a good sign with Ant is he's on board with that. He's not looking to load manage at this point in his career. And you know, and there's some fair things about load management too. Like I know I said during the season that sometimes, like that, probably after the Houston game, of like, and kind of looks like Ant could use a day off, you know, and it's all a balance there, but it's about the player having the right mindset to want to do as much as they reasonably should be expected to do. And I don't have that concern with Ant, because I think that's separate than some of the being in great shape stuff, right? That's what we're talking about. There's those different buckets. I think Ant is passionate about that. And I think if you're the Timberwolves and you're looking at forking over $200 million to him, that's something you feel, you should feel really good about as an organization. What stood out to you from when you did ask him about the contract extension this summer and where his head is at about this getting Rudy money?
It wasn't a comment for too much. It was really just one question.
Yeah.
And he just said, he's like, I'm not doing this for the money. I want to be known as a great player. Mm-hmm. You know, the very safe political answer to that question, right? So, and that was basically it. There wasn't much else other than that. It was asked and it was answered.
Right.
So.
Right.
That's all I got for you there.
No, understandable. So let's just run through quick. I don't think I've mentioned these numbers specifically on the pod. Mm-hmm. The contract he will likely be offered at the beginning of July when they can offer that is a 5-year, $204 million extension with where you can write in into the contract, as I would expect. It will be written that if he makes all NBA next season, then he jumps up from a 25% max player to a 30% max player, which would make that a 5-year, $245 million contract. It's the same contract that Ja Morant signed a year ago. Ja did not make all NBA for reasons we're not going to get into on this, but that's the same sort of proposition that Ant and the Timberwolves face is he'll be offered a 5-year, $204 million contract at minimum. And then if he does make all NBA next season, it could go up to as high as 5 years, $245 million, which is another $50 million player on the books, which is crazy to think about in the context of this team. But obviously something that I think is a no-brainer to offer him. And I just hope that that all goes swimmingly and it's signed and we see about all NBA next year. Again, it would be pretty unprecedented if Ant didn't agree to that contract. Anything else stick out randomly from this? He had a line about Nas. You want to touch on that?
Yeah, I asked him. I said, you know, saw you and Nas had some pictures together in Miami or wherever it was that they were. I said, you know, how much are you hoping that they re-sign Nas? And he's like, I pray for it. I'm praying for it. It's like, yeah. That's my brother, you know. So yeah. He's praying that they re-sign Nas. He talked really highly about Rudy, you know, and just the partnership there. And I think that stood out to me and then the tone with which he talked about just, you know, hey, I love Rudy. He's like, he's great. I want to go to France in the off season. You know, one of the quotes he had too, was that he felt like at the end of the season, he had kind of figured out how to operate with two bigs on the floor. And I think he said it was fun once he figured it out.
Right. It was actually fun once I figured it out, man. I'm looking forward to it again. So that's
I think that's where, you know, the Denver series was probably a big help to him.
Because
that was probably a big moment for him, was a breakthrough maybe happened there where
something like, to point to of like, to oh, point to. Right, this, you know, this can work. Here's an example of it. Here's some tape of it. And that's going to be right. Like, and that's one of the challenges he faces as well next season, is not only in his individual growth, but in growing within a team concept. Right. And he happens to play for a team that has a more rigid construct in the way that the roster is made up with the two bigs. And that's what I've said all throughout the season, was the part I wasn't focused on was Carl and Rudy. The part I was focused on was Rudy and Ant, and where that wasn't growing on. Actually, you know, as we both talked about or written about a ton, the Carl and Rudy together part often worked. It was about how Rudy worked with others on the team. You know, some players like Mike Conley or Kyle Anderson, it functioned better than, you know, D'Angelo Russell or, you know, whoever, Ant, that it wasn't working as seamlessly. That is a big part, should be a big part of Ant summer, as well as figuring out how do I fit within this roster construction. And I mean, going to France, maintaining a dialogue with Rudy, what more can you really ask than putting in the work, which it sounds like he will do this summer.
100%, and I think that's where they're at. And you know, if they run it all back and they do stick to kind of this same kind of top six, that they have right now, and maybe some of the bench changes around it, but if the same main six guys are back, we'll see how much more seamless it is.
Right.
I anticipate it would be at least significantly better than.
Right.
We saw at the beginning of last season, and you know, in their mind, they're hoping that that West Coast trip before the rest of the season kind of went to hell from there is kind of the
that's the goal, the thing to hold on
for
to.
Next year. Yeah. That's that those couple of games are what they're hanging on to for hope for next year.
And I would remind them that Naz Reid was an important part of
correct. That. I would remind them Naz Reid was a big part of that too. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Chris, a lot of different stuff is going to happen over the course of the summer, or even inaction is something with this team too, in that it will illustrate which direction this team is moving forward for next year. You'll be all over it as we get to, you know, the draft in June and free agency in July, and we'll continue talking about it. But I think this was a really good, you know, kind of setting the table article in not that's about the future of the franchise player, but is really also about the team as a whole, because Ants, if he hasn't already become, is going to become the straw that stirs the drink. So I think, if you haven't read Chris's article yet, head over to StarTribune.com and check it out. There's a handful of different things that we didn't even touch on in this somehow in an hour, but I thought it was great, Chris, and I appreciate you coming on to dig into it in a little bit more detail.
No problem. Anytime.
Again, go over to Star Tribune to read that article. As always, you can follow Chris on Twitter at Christopher Hine, and he's tweeting out all his articles there too. If you're looking to hone in on a specific place to go read that, head over to his Twitter feed again at Christopher Hine. I'm Dane at Dane Moore NBA. I'll be back to talk with you, not about the Wolves, but about the conference finals, the first two games of them with Britt on Thursday morning. Until then, he's Chris. I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around, yeah.